And so my name, again, is Chris Atwood. I'm the features editor for Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise magazine and co-author of The Passion Test, The Effortless Path to Discovering Your Destiny. And welcome, everyone. We're so glad that you're here. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise Passion Series, where twice a month we interview someone who's been incredibly successful at living their passions so you can learn how to discover your own and begin living your own personal destiny. Tonight's interview will appear on the cover of Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise in June at www.healthywealthy, the letter N is in Nancy, wise.com. So you can go back and read an edited version of the interview then. The theme of these interviews was captured by Woodrow Wilson when he said, "You are not here merely to make a living. You are here in order to enable the world to live more amply, with greater vision, with a finer spirit of hope and achievement. You are here to enrich the world, and you impoverish yourself if you forget the errand." Our guest tonight followed his passions to create an international runaway bestseller. Robert Kiyosaki is the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which was USA Today's number one money book for 2004, and which has spent over 5 years on the New York Times bestseller list. Robert's an investor, an entrepreneur, an educator whose perspectives on money and investing fly in the face of conventional wisdom. He has virtually single-handedly challenged and changed the way tens of millions around the world think about money. And when I talked with him earlier today in preparation for this interview, he promised that he was going to be controversial, so hang on to your seats. Robert was born and raised in Hawaii. He's a fourth-generation Japanese-American. He graduated from college in New York and then joined the Marine Corps, serving in Vietnam as an officer and helicopter gunship pilot. After the war, Robert went to work in sales for the Xerox Corporation, and in 1977 started a company that brought the first nylon and Velcro surfer wallets to market. He founded an international education company in 1985 that taught business investing to tens of thousands of students around the world. And in 1994, he sold his business and through his investments was able to retire at the age of 47. During his short-lived retirement, he wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That book has now been translated into 45 languages, is available in 90 countries, and the Rich Dad series has sold over 25 million copies worldwide. Robert writes a biweekly column, Why the Rich Are Getting Richer, for Yahoo Finance, and a monthly column titled Rich Returns for Entrepreneur Magazine. Tonight he joins us from Arizona. Robert, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Oh, thank you, Chris, and thanks everybody for calling in.
Yeah. Isn't it great to hear people calling from all over the world for these things?
It's awesome.
It is. We love it. And I have to say, you know, as you heard, some of these people got up at 2 in the morning to be able to hear you. So.
I thank you for doing that.
Now, Robert, Rich Dad, Poor Dad has been on the bestseller list for over 5 years. The other day I listened to you in San Francisco where you spoke to over 60,000 people. What role have your passions, the things that are most important in your life, played in the success that you enjoy today?
I think you used the word passions. So there's more than one answer to that. One thing I come up with is I think in many ways I'm trying to save my own family from financial demise. Because when I was 7 years old, I remember walking around my house in Hawaii and seeing my mother crying. And she was crying because we didn't have enough money to pay the bills. And so I asked her, I said, "What's wrong?" And she says, "We just don't have any money." And I said, "Well, why does, you know," and I got really angry at my dad. I said, "How can you let my mom cry like this?" And she says, "Well, he's at school." And he was going for his master's degree. And I still remember thinking, I said, "Well, if you're so smart, why are we broke?" Ever since then, I've been sort of, the word passion, I've given a lot of thought to this subject. Passion to me isn't love. Passion is anger and love.
Mm.
It is a combination of the two that, one is fire and one is softer.
Right.
So I get so angry when I see people struggling financially. And I get angry when I see the school system wasting time making us study things we will never use. And then also it's my love of my family, but also the love of, having fun making a lot of money. So passion to me is anger plus love.
Yeah. I really appreciate the way you described it because when we talk about passions, I think we really are talking about that fire that burns inside. And sometimes it is the reaction to things we don't like outside. And other times it's the fire to achieve or create what we want, right?
Right.
And so will you tell us the story of how you got involved in doing your present work? How did your career get started, and how did it lead you where you are today?
Well, as I said, when I was 7, I saw my mother crying, and then I thought that was ridiculous. And then when I came back from Vietnam in 73 and 74, my dad was unemployed. And he was unemployed, although he was a PhD, and real smart, good, great guy, a tremendous, great man. But he was unemployed because he ran for governor lieutenant governor against his boss, the governor. And the governor said, "You'll never work in the state of Hawaii again." So all my father knew how to be was a public servant, a government employee. And so when I come back from Vietnam, and well, I got very fed up with the United States out there, and I came back and I said to Dad, "What are you doing?" You know, he says, "Well, I'm going back to school." And I went, he says, "You should go back to school too." I said, "For what?" He says, "Get your master's, get your PhD, and then get a job with the government." And I went, "Yeah, I'd rather go back to Vietnam." So it was all those really stupid things. And my dad eventually died broke, and if not for a government pension, you know, he would have been on the streets. And so that's when I began to just get disgustingly sick. Excuse me. Every time I hear people say, "Go to school so you can get a good job and the government's going to take care of you," I mean, what a wimpy idea that is. And so that's what burns in my soul when I keep asking the school system. I said, "Why don't we teach kids about money? You know, why do we study subjects that we'll never use?" And they have not come up with an answer yet.
Well, now you also had a rich dad, as I recall.
Yeah, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a true story of my two dads. And starting at the age of 9, you know, after I saw my mother crying at 7, I really began to search for what I now know is a mentor. So I was an apprentice to a mentor. And there's a difference between a teacher. My dad was a teacher, and my rich dad was a mentor, my best friend's father. And a teacher is somebody who teaches you a subject, and a mentor is somebody you want to grow up to be, somebody you respect. And I really wanted to grow up to become a rich man. I didn't want to grow up to be a teacher, of all things. So that's the difference, and then I started to just listen to my rich dad more than my poor dad.
Now, it's interesting that much of your fame and success has been built around writing, and I heard you the other day say that you hate to write, which sounds very much like it's the opposite of passion, and yet your success is built on your books. You write several syndicated articles. You said that you spend much of your time writing. How do you reconcile your need to write with pursuing your passions?
Well, I think God's punishing me for being a bad student. That's why I'm writing. Yeah, 'cause I think people have heard I flunked out of high school when I was 15 and 17 because I couldn't write. Mm. And I was just a really, you know, punky kid. And you know, today I have one of the top 3 selling books in the world today. And I still hate writing, but it's not because I like to write. It's because I'm so still, I love making money. Making money is so much fun. But I still hate it that we have such great poverty in the world. And I don't mean poverty from a poor level. I mean from a mental level. I mean, how many people out there are working at a job you hate simply because you need the money? Or what I'm really concerned about right today is that we have such financial ignorance. You know, the President of the United States and Greenspan stand up and say there's no inflation. And you look at the cost of housing, and you look at the price of oil, and look at the price of gold, and these guys have the audacity to say there's no inflation, and people sit there and go, "Oh, I believe you. I believe you." I mean, what morons can we be? So, you know, I sit there and I write just because I just can't stand it that people are so gullible and believe our politicians and our public servants like that.
So what I hear is that your writing is driven by the anger that you experience at seeing what's being put over on people.
Oh, absolutely. Again, how can people be so dumb and gullible? I don't understand. Why do people work for a living at a job that they hate or don't like, or all they dream about is retirement? You know, there's something really sick about that. So that's not passion, that's, you know, slavery.
Right. So what's the alternative?
I would say you find out what you're supposed to be doing and get educated. Like the thing I always talked to my old man, my dad, I said, you know, he'd always ask for a pay raise. I said, "Why don't you just read a book on money instead?" And he goes, well, I'm not interested in money. I said, then why do you want a pay raise?
Yeah.
And I finally found the answer, and the answer is he didn't know. And what I found out in the psychology of human beings is when they don't understand something, they must put it down. They must denigrate it.
Uh-huh.
That's why so many poor people will say, well, I'm not interested in money, or artists, or intelligentsia, or academians. Well, I'm not interested in money. They have to put it down because they know they don't know. So they have to make it little below them. So that's the ultimate of, that's beyond ignorance, that's arrogance.
Right.
You know, ignorance is anger plus ignorance. That's where they get arrogance from, anger at their own ignorance. And so I sit there and I watch it, and meanwhile, I make as much money as I like. I have as much money to spend as I like. I'm having a great time. And the only reason I write is I look around at all these people clinging to job security, you know, hoping for a pension from the government or Social Security and Medicare, or hoping their 401ks where they're full of bloody mutual funds, trying to save money and get out of debt. And I'm going, what's wrong with you guys? You know, and I sit there and I said, there's something wrong. But that's when in 1994, you know, I sold my company enough to retire on all this.
Mm-hmm.
I just wrote the story of how could I retire without a job, without a 401k, without a pension, without mutual funds, without stocks? How did I retire? And I was sitting alone and one night writing in my little cabin, and I said, I had a rich dad and I had a poor dad. That's where the book came from.
Uh-huh. Amazing.
It's a true story, you know. So I sit there with anger is why I write. And it's basically life's experience is what I write about. And since I didn't do that well in school, I'm able to put my ideas over simply enough that the average person can understand how I finance.
Absolutely. Well, and listening to you, what I hear is that for those of our listeners who are not satisfied with their financial situation and may even find themselves putting down money or putting down people who have money, the issue is education. Is that right?
Well, the issue is you first have to acknowledge that you don't know something.
So talk a little bit more about that. What do you mean when you first have to acknowledge that you don't know something?
Well, there's nothing worse than thinking you know something that's not true that you think is true. You know, that's like thinking the world's flat.
Right.
Your whole basis of life is operating on a flat world theory. And so you think it's flat, and then you're afraid to go off the edge of the cliff or the earth and all that stuff. The biggest thing is that most people used to say, well, I wasn't taught much about money, and what is it that the rich know? And at that point, you need to question everything you've been taught. For example, how many of your listeners out there have been taught that it's smart to save money?
Mm-hmm.
You know how stupid that is? I mean, do you have any idea? Because we're not saving money anymore. After 1971, the U.S. dollar turned into a currency. It's not money.
So talk about that. I'm sure most of our listeners don't have a clue what you're talking about right now.
Something of money is something of real value. A currency is an IOU from the federal government. So that's the Australian dollar, the Swiss franc, I got with a euro. They're all IOUs.
Mm-hmm.
And a currency is designed to lose value over time. That's why people say there's inflation. There's not really inflation. There's really devaluation of your currency. And the reason that governments do that is simply that they can borrow $1 million today and in 10 years pay it back with $800,000 because the dollar has been devalued that much. So you look in the last 10 years, since 1996 to 2006, the U.S. dollar has dropped over 50% in value as compared to gold. In 1996, gold was approximately $250 an ounce. Today it's pushing $600 an ounce. That means your dollar has dropped over 50% in purchasing power as compared to gold. And yet, the pundits, the politicians, and the school teachers will say, oh, there's inflation. That's not inflation. It's your dollar dropping like a rock. So that's why the people who are saving money are the biggest losers of all. The second group of losers are the people who are saving with a 401k or mutual funds. And when you look at the really professional investors like Warren Buffett and stuff like this, you know, most of the advisors say diversify, diversify, diversify. And what Buffett says is diversification is protection against your own ignorance. So I don't diversify. Buffett doesn't diversify. But your financial advisors will tell you to diversify. And you've got to sit there and you should question it at that point. I say, how come the greatest investor, the richest investor in the world, says don't diversify, and my financial planner is telling me to diversify? And until you step back and question what you've been taught and what you think is true that might not be true, until that time, you're basically a robot running upon your ideas.
Mm. So what I hear is one of the key things for our listeners is to begin questioning the things that they've been taught all their lives about money.
Question what they've been taught that is true that might not be true. That's what I
said. Uh-huh. Okay, good.
It's like Earth is flat, you know, until Christopher Columbus says, well, maybe that's not true. But most people have been, you know, it's called groupthink. You do it because everybody else is doing it, so you line up for your 401k mutual funds, or you line up for your Social Security check, or you go to school to get a job, never questioning it, maybe I shouldn't get a job. So the reason Rich Dad, Poor Dad is such a powerful story, it's a true story, like I said, is having two dads. One said, go to school and get a job, and the other one said, don't be an idiot. You'll never get rich with a job. And until I had two different points of view, could I find out who I was. At that point, I had the power to make a choice and decide for myself which thoughts were best for me. And what most people have done, most of their lives, you know, the mother and father say, no, don't do what you think, do as I tell you to do.
Right.
And so we're programmed to, you know, so many people follow in their father's footsteps, like George Bush, and other people like that. Mm-hmm. And they don't think anymore. They just do what they're told to do. And the reason I know that so well is it took me going to Vietnam, and I'm out there shooting commies, and I realized one day, you know, they said, we're killing commies for Christ. And I'm sitting out there going, wait a minute, these are human beings out here. And they said, no, they're not going to go to heaven because they don't believe in Jesus Christ as a Marine Corps. And I went, holy moly.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, you know, I said, what are they? And they said, well, they don't believe in God. And I realized a lot of them were Buddhists.
Yeah.
You know, right. And I was going, wait a minute, I better wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And once I woke up in Vietnam, that's when I began to really question everything, especially when I flew helicopters out there. And I would read in the newspaper the battles we were fighting in, and I realized, I don't know what battle they were in, but it wasn't the same battle I was in. And people, that I realized our news was censored.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, holy moly. You know, but we're told we have freedom of speech and no censorship. I'm going, wait a minute.
Mm.
And it's only, and I was about 25 at the time, and at that point, I had to take another step backwards and then again question what I had been taught. Is there freedom of speech, or are we censored? Is there freedom of the press, yes or no? And until you begin to question everything, I'm not saying they're right or wrong, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but every so often we need to step back and question what we've been taught to think.
So how do we make a decision about what's the direction which is going to lead us to success, to fulfillment, to those things that we choose to have in our life then?
Well, I it goes back to your subject. It's called passion, and passion is, you know, anger plus love. That's a combination of the two. Excuse me, I'm recovering from a cold.
Right.
But, like, there's so many problems this world faces, like AIDS. What a massive problem that is. Or the polar ice caps melting. What a massive problem that is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to take on AIDS because it doesn't really resonate that much for me. And the ice cap, that really concerns me also. But the question was, what challenge can I solve that I'm best here? You know, what I think the Hindus say, your dharma. What were you sent here on earth to do? It's not about what I like doing.
Right.
It's about what I hate. And I just hate. I go, I don't mean hate in a bad way. I mean, I hate it that the polar ice caps are melting. I hate it that there's an AIDS. But which one of the challenges am I best equipped to handle? And that's your dharma.
And how did you figure that out for yourself?
It was really easy, what I hated and what I loved. You know, I just really dislike it that our school system brainwashes us into being employees of the rich.
Yes.
But I didn't realize that until I had another point of view, my rich dad's point of view.
Right. And then what did you love?
Huh?
You said it was based on what you hated and what you loved. So
you
love making money.
I have a great time. Cool. Look at Donald Trump. That guy's having a blast.
Yeah.
And what other people will tell you, well, money doesn't make you happy. How much more wrong made that story? You know, I mean, the only person that made that story up is somebody who's obviously never been without money, or they're so broke they don't know the difference between misery. You know what I mean?
Right.
But when I didn't have money and I've been without money, it's horrible.
Yeah.
You know, your friends desert you. You know, you smell.
I'm sure many of our listeners would agree that being without money is horrible. So share with us some of the principles then that your rich dad taught you that helped you to get an education, a financial education.
Well, the real simple one was that instead of working for money, have money work for me.
Hmm.
Now, that makes sense to me. I mean, you know, like, so when I invest today, I can get an 80% return, 100% return, an infinite return on my money. But a financial planner will tell you 8% is good. At that point, you're going to say, well, then I'm still working for the financial planner because they're going to take a commission anyway.
Right.
So until you, the words are, until you step back and then question your thoughts. In other words, are you a robot running upon embedded commands, you know?
Right.
That's really when it begins to start for you. You say, maybe what I'm thinking is not accurate anymore. Like, you know, let me give you another idea. From 1990 to the year 2000, the financial planners came out and said, you know, work hard, save money, get out of debt, invest for the long term in mutual funds, and diversify.
Right.
And that's when the mass of the baby boom generation was entering the so-called stock market because they realized that the pensions weren't going to work, so they had these mutual funds, and they started buying these 401ks and whatever they started to do. And from 1990 to the year 2000, work hard, save money, get out of debt, invest for the long term in mutual funds, and diversify, worked. Then suddenly in the year 2000, it stopped working. And people who followed that dogma got ripped off the tune of $7 to $9 trillion following the financial planner's advice of work hard, save money, get out of debt, invest for the long term, and diversify, buy, hold, and pray. It didn't work. There's still people hanging on. It hasn't worked. And what happened instead was that what took off was real estate, oil, gas, silver, and gold. And then the financial planners are telling them, no, don't do that. It's too risky. The reason it's too risky is because the financial planner will lose their commission. So all I'm saying is not right or wrong, but you sit back and you look at it and say, well, why am I doing this? It's because somebody told you, work hard, save money, get out of debt, invest for the long term, diversify. It's good advice.
Yes.
And save money is the worst of all because you're not saving money. After 1971, the U.S. dollar turned into a currency. And that means savers are the biggest losers of all. The dollar is dropping faster. You know, even Warren Buffett doesn't save money. If you read his books, he doesn't recommend saving money unless you can get a 15% return on your cash.
You're right. Well, and Warren Buffett has been getting quite a bit better return than that for quite a long time.
Yes, he gets the average is about 22%. But if you're in real estate or entrepreneurship, you can beat the 22% all day long.
So talk to us a little bit about that, because I'm sure our listeners are perking up right now.
Okay, there's a reason for that is because with what Warren invests in, he has no control. If you invest in a stock, you have no control over it. If you invest in savings, you have no control. You have no control over interest rates.
Mm.
If you invest in mutual funds, you absolutely have no control. And bonds, you have no control. But with real estate and with businesses, you have control. You can be creative. For example, I bought, it's an example I use in my book all the time, I bought 80 acres of land for $115,000.
Mm-hmm.
I chopped off 30 acres. I sold 30 acres for $215,000. I put $100,000 in my pocket, and I still have the 50 acres remaining. So what's my return on investment? It's infinite.
Right.
And so it's very easy to get infinite returns if you have a right brain and you're creative.
Mm.
But you cannot be creative with stocks because that's called cheating. And that's what the SEC was created for. So stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and savings are for very, very left-brain people.
Uh-huh.
You know, people use PCs. Mac users are the guys on the right-brain side. That's the difference.
Got it.
And there's two kinds of investors, open-minded investors and closed-minded investors. And the closed-minded investors are looking for the magic formula, you know, so they invest for the long term, diversify, save money. They can't think. And if you're open-minded, then you'll go to real estate or you'll go to business.
Now, one of the things you talk about a lot is the value of owning your own business and creating your own business. And is having your own business a key piece of creating wealth?
It depends if you're an entrepreneur, and most people are entrepreneurs. They've just been bred out of them because you went to school to learn you could be an employee.
Right.
But I've noticed, you know, in my neighborhood, we have a young woman who comes around, I think she's in junior high or something, and she knocks on my door and says, I'm offering my babysitting services. So she's technically an entrepreneur just the same as Bill Gates is. And then I said, but I don't have any kids. She says, can I shine your shoes? And I gave her all my shoes. I said, shine away, kid. And I was so impressed with her. You know what I mean? She's probably 15 or 14, whatever it is. And she is going to be a killer. You know, she's fantastic.
Yeah. But I think most people have, it has been bred out of them, whatever entrepreneurial spirit that people may have. One of the things that our readers tell us a lot is, how do you overcome the fear of stepping out on your own in that way? How do you overcome the fear of moving out into territory you don't understand or don't know?
Well, that's the oldest way of education. It's called the mentor apprenticeship.
Uh-huh.
So go work for somebody for free. I went to work for my rich dad for free for years.
Uh-huh.
And what I learned from him has proven invaluable, because what it bought me was my freedom. You know, I don't have a job, and I don't want a job. I pay less in taxes. I make more money. I can start multiple companies. I have companies I've had companies all over the world. My last companies are in China, South America, Canada, and the U.S. So I'm not. It's because I'm right-brained. I'm not left-brained. The other thing too, as an entrepreneur, I don't need a visa or a green card or apply for immigration statuses. But let's say I'm a doctor, I have to get licensed before I can practice.
Mm-hmm.
So you control the game. So the reason I love entrepreneurship is I can travel the world and do what I want to do and all this. But it's not me saying this. The laws of the world have always been written by the rich for the rich. I'll say it again. The laws of the world have been written by the rich for the rich and written against the laborer, the person who sells their time and their labor and their skills. That's reality all over the world.
And so what does that mean for people who are listening tonight?
I can step back and say, do I want to sell my labor? You know, if I'm a doctor, I'm selling my labor. Or if I'm a massage therapist, I'm selling my labor. Or if I'm an employee, I'm selling my labor. Or do I want to sell my knowledge?
Mm.
And that's your question. So I didn't want to sell my labor, because when you sell labor, it's the highest tax of all forms of taxation. The next highest tax is then savings are the next highest tax. Or, you know, and then the least highest tax are people who are investors or who are entrepreneurs. And that's why in the United States, the best tax rates favor the entrepreneur and the real estate investor, and they punish the person with a mutual fund 401k retirement plan.
Mm.
And I'm not the guy saying it. Just check with your accountant.
Got it. Okay. Now, being an entrepreneur, though, is not all smooth sailing. I mean, most people know that, and what keeps most people out of being an entrepreneur, I think, is not only lack of education, but also that you hear an awful lot of horror stories. And it hasn't always been smooth sailing for you, has it?
I said it was smooth sailing. If you wanted smooth sailing, join the post office.
You're
just getting gunned down.
So talk to us about some of the obstacles, some of the challenges you faced, and how you moved through them. Because I know for many people, being able to hear that someone else has gone through it makes it a little bit easier to face it themselves.
Well, I think if right now they're saying to themselves, I don't want to face the challenges, then you should be an employee.
Hmm.
You know, it depends upon how you look at the word challenge. You know, like for me, if somebody says you want to climb Mount Everest, I say hell no. So I'm probably not never going to climb Mount Everest. But if somebody's, like right now I'm working with Donald Trump, and we're working on taking me from just a simple multimillionaire to a billionaire. And at first, you know, I was going, why do I want to become a billionaire? You know, isn't, you know, 50 million or 80 million enough? And then finally he says, because it's a challenge. And I went, oh, got it. So it depends upon what challenge excites you. For me to be a great golfer, the challenge doesn't excite me. Mm-hmm. But it excited Tiger Woods. That's his passion.
Right.
And if somebody says, you want to climb Mount Everest, like I said, nah, it doesn't turn me on. Do you want to fly a plane around the world? No, I'd probably fall asleep. You want to fly a balloon around the world? No, it doesn't challenge me. So you've really got to find the challenge that excites you. So for me, you know, I just did a talk with my latest mentor, and he says he doesn't like to buy stocks, and he doesn't like to, you know, listen to analysts and all that. He loves the challenge of creating a multi-million dollar company out of nothing. He says that's the most exciting challenge in the world. That's why he's an entrepreneur. That's why he's one of my best friends. It's because that's a challenge that excites us.
Right.
Now, if it doesn't excite you, you know, don't do it. You know, so some people want to have 15 kids, and
right.
some people don't. So it really comes down to your personal thing, and you take a look at it and do it.
Yeah, and this is what you were talking about, this idea of dharma, or what is your own, what is the one's own personal destiny, and from what you're saying, what I hear is that the things that the challenges you love and the passions that excite you are a key or leading you in the direction of that dharma or destiny that you're here to do.
Perfectly said.
Great.
Perfectly said. You know, because if it doesn't either make you angry or make you happy, don't do it.
Right.
You know, I mean, I meet so many people say I'm doing what I love, but I said, but you're broke. And then I said, obviously you're not doing enough, and that's a factor of intelligence. Is many people are very, very myopic, or you know, they only do what they love rather than what they need to do. So the definition of intelligence is knowing what to do, doing what you need to do, in spite of you, even if you don't want to do it.
And so, your example is writing books, right?
Yeah, I wish I didn't have to write books, but obviously that's part of my dharma, you know. So I sit down and write, and I've become a pretty good writer. I'm a big fan of Apple because they made it simple enough for me to do so,
mm-hmm.
and I'm starting to enjoy it after a while. Mm-hmm. But you know, but for a while it looked like punishment. It's the same as exercise. You know, when I meet somebody who's overweight, generally it's because they're lazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just lost 55 pounds, and it took me a year to do so. Mm-hmm. And the reason I was overweight because it was just as easy to say I'm too tired to work out, and I'd rather have a drink, or I'd rather have some coffee, or I'd rather have a sugar donut. You know,
right.
And it's really tough to be disciplined. And I had to go back to my Marine Corps training. I went to the military academy, and I said I had to get back to where I was, you know, really focused again. And I hired a coach who was tough on me.
Well, and Robert, isn't it the case that when you really are paying attention to the things that you're passionate about, to the challenges that really turn you on and get you excited, that isn't it a little bit easier to be disciplined, to be focused in those areas?
I don't know if it's easier. I keep hearing that word.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't it easier? Isn't it easier? Well, the reason people are in trouble is because they want life easy.
Mm.
That's why they gain weight and they turn into blimps, you know, or they have a bad marriage because it's easier to have a bad marriage. You know, if you want to be unhappy, unhealthy, and unwealthy, it's really easy. Just do nothing.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah.
You know, gravity will take care of everything. So I think it's not that I don't, you know, I battle myself with my laziness, my want of life to be easy. I battle that every single morning. I wake up and the fat boy wakes up and the fat boy goes, okay, you don't have to go to the gym. You know, you can have another sugar donut this morning, and you worked out 3 days ago, and, you know, I'm battling the fat boy.
Mm.
And then there's Rambo who says, get your fat ass out there. I mean, you know, I'm schizophrenic. I got these two characters in my head. So there's a battle between the fat boy and Rambo and the poor boy and the rich guy.
Yeah.
Every morning, the same battle. And I'm not saying it's easy. You know,
yep.
I get up and I go, I just happen to enjoy making money. So it's easy for me.
Yeah.
But because I enjoy it, but it's not easy. I mean, what I do, like I formed a mining company in China, and it's, I tell you, battling the Chinese government is incredible. And everybody says, well, why are you there? I said, because it's hard.
Mm, yeah.
As John Kennedy said years ago, he says, we're going to the moon not because it's easy, but because it's hard.
Yes.
And that's what successful people do. It's the fat, lazy, unhappy, poor people who want life easy.
So what does it take for the Rambo to win out over the fat boy?
I hired a coach.
A mentor again, yes?
Well, yeah, and he punishes me.
Mm.
You know, well, look at it. You know, so many people in this negative word on punishment. Look, you get punished one way or the other. If you don't do the right things financially, you're punished with poverty.
Yes.
Or you're punished with having bills, or you're punished with, you know, not having the nice car or the nice clothes or traveling first class or private jet. That's punishment.
Yeah.
Being poor is his own punishment.
Yeah.
And so they can sit there and just take their punishment and say, well, at least it's easy. I'm going, well, that's easy. And it's the same as exercise. if you don't exercise, you get punished anyway because you're they call them muffin tops, and your belt hangs over your pants. You know, stuff like this. I tell you, I was more than a muffin top. I was a blimpo top, you know, gut hanging out and all this. And I was going, God, that's the punishment for lazy thoughts and behavior. So
the answer is there is no easy way out.
I don't think life was meant to be easy.
Yeah.
You know, I think there must be passion. And
yes.
It can be easy, don't get me wrong, but there's always a price for the easiness. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, and what I hear is that the passion drives you through the hard stuff.
Absolutely.
Because it keeps you moving. It keeps you. It gives you that fire inside that moves you through no matter how hard it is.
Absolutely. Like, you know, one of the things I learned as a pilot in Vietnam versus these regular pilots was one of the best lessons I ever learned in life. And so I was there flying, you know, and I was really having a hard time learning how to fly. It's tough and all this stuff. And the guy's pounding and the instructor's pounding in your head. You know, go lower, turn harder, shoot straighter. And I'm going, why? And he says there's one reason. He says in combat, there's no second place.
Uh-huh.
He says only one of you will come home alive. And I'm training you to think like there's only one place. There's no second place in life.
Mm.
And so then I went into learning air-to-air dogfighting in the sky with the single-engine fighters and stuff like this.
Mm.
And with that thought in mind, that only one of us would go home and alive that day, that was one of the best lessons in life I've ever learned. And to this day, I live my life as if there's no second place.
Mm.
There's only one place, and that's first place. Now, I don't recommend it. I'm just telling you that's why my book has been on the bestseller list. It's number one this week and next week on the New York Times. And the book has been out for 9 years.
Right.
9 years the book has been out. And it's still
amazing.
Number one. Why? Because in my world, in my reality of myself, there's only one place, and that's first place, because second place is the first loser. And I know so many people say, oh, that's so evil. That's so insane. Well, as Joe Montana, the greatest quarterback in history, said, he said, if keeping score wasn't important, we wouldn't keep score if it wasn't important.
Okay.
And that's why I have financial statements to keep score financially. That's why I go see my doctor for my blood tests and my cholesterol counts and my weight and my plaque levels. I'm keeping score because I'm playing to win.
Right.
Most people are playing to be just to survive. And nothing wrong with that, but it's a choice you make in life.
And as you said, there's punishment
either way or another. Punishment, yeah.
Right.
Either way, being poor or struggling financially is punishment. You know, struggling to get up the stairs is punishment. You know, having bad health is punishment. Having a lousy marriage is, oh, Jesus, that's more than punishment.
That's downright torture.
That's called hell.
Yeah, absolutely.
I won't mention the names, but I have friends who are married in hell.
Mm.
I mean, they on the surface everything looks like a father knows best, you know, or leave it to Beaver. But they're in hell. You know, they don't talk to each other. They're cheating on each other. They're miserable, but they're sticking it out for the kids.
Right. Now, you know, a lot of our readers and listeners, they say, okay, so I get clear on my passions, but how do I make money doing it? How do I earn a living or support myself or become wealthy doing it? And you've talked about financial education. Can you share with us some of the key pieces of financial knowledge that someone needs to know in order to create wealth in their life?
Yeah, the number one skill for being rich is the ability to sell, S-E-L-L. And too many people sell is a four-letter word. But you've got to sell. You know, a secretary sells her skills 8 hours a day for X amount of dollars. It's all sales. So that's why in 1974, when I finally left the Marine Corps, my first job was learning how to sell. If you sell, sales equals income. The second thing you have to learn is how to manage money. And the third thing you have to learn is how to reinvest your money. Because if you don't get past, if you just manage it and you just earn it and spend it, you're gone.
Right.
So if you read Warren Buffett's books and all this, the key is not investing. The key is reinvesting.
You so talked about that, will you?
Well, so my money comes out tax-free and it gets reinvested. That money comes out tax-free and is reinvested. So you know that thing that's saying pay yourself first.
Right.
you know, some people struggle to pay themselves 10%. So every dollar they make, they pay 10% in a savings account.
Right.
It's silly. But my wife and I reinvest 70 to 80% of our money.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're so that when that money comes out, we reinvest it again. And that's why we have so much money. So if you do the right things, you'll actually have too much money. You can talk to my wife every month or so. We go, geez, what am I going to do with our money? So we have to reinvest it. And so it becomes a full-time job of reinvesting your wealth. Most people have no wealth to invest. Number one is because they don't make enough of it, and two, they mismanage it. So the key is to learn how to make it by selling something. The second point is how to manage it, and the third part is to invest and then reinvest and then reinvest and then reinvest.
Now, you, as I mentioned earlier, you just spoke, and you have been speaking for, I think, a couple of years for the Learning Annex's Real Estate Expos. Is real estate the best way to reinvest your money, or are there other ways as well?
No, it's something to do with real estate. It has to do with you.
Okay, you know, so talk about that.
Well, just like if I put a moron in my helicopter, it's going to crash. So what, are you going to blame the helicopter? It has nothing to do with the asset class. It has nothing to do with, you know, people say, would you recommend real estate? No, I said, I recommend a brain transplant. So, do you know what I mean? People blame real estate, or they blame the stock market, or they blame the bond market. It has nothing to do with it. Again, it goes back to your what you're passionate about.
Right.
So, if you love the stock market, have a great day in there, you know, and you'll do well. You'll do better than you'll do in real estate. If you love bonds, some people love bonds, then you do it. But so let me say this. This is my biggest concern right now. Is I started working as an apprentice for Standard Oil back in 1966 when I was 18 years old. I worked with them until I graduated from college in 1970. And so I understand oil. The problem today is oil is probably going to go to $100 to $150 a barrel or $10 to $20 a gallon. Now, the problem with that is wealth equals energy. And when the cost of energy goes up, certain people's wealth will go down. So, for example, if you're driving a taxi and the price of gasoline goes up, your wealth is going to go down. But if you're drilling for oil and the price of oil goes up, then you get rich.
Right.
So what I'm afraid is going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years is that there's going to be a big crack in the whole system. It's going to be caused by the dollar dropping because, again, it's not money, it's a currency. And the price of oil is going to go up. And that means people in the stock market will get wiped out simply because the stock market is based upon expansion. And an economy can only expand if it has cheap energy, and we don't have cheap energy anymore. So instead of expanding, the economy will probably contract. When the economy contracts, the stock market, certain stocks, like if you're like a, you know, a company that's like a trucking company, you'll contract. Your airlines, you're toast. If you're buying real estate in Hawaii, you're probably toast because the cost of energy will affect the valuation of your asset class. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why right now, What I'm investing in is number one, I still buy real estate because real estate, you know, well-bought real estate, not over-leveraged real estate, will go up because as the dollar drops and the price of energy goes up, real estate generally appreciates because the value of the dollar drops. The second thing I'm investing in that in millions is oil. I own my own oil company. Three is gold, four is silver, and five, a handgun. That's optimistic about the future.
Yeah, I can tell you're really optimistic about the future.
But I am optimistic because I'm hoping the price of oil goes up. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I hope the dollar drops. So I'm really an optimist.
Aligned with your passions.
Yeah, if the price of oil goes up and the dollar drops, I'm a trillionaire.
Yes.
You know? And other people will be losers. Now, if it goes the other way, it doesn't make any difference because I'm still in business. I sell a lot of money.
Sure. So I want you to talk a little bit more about this idea of financial education and how people can go about educating themselves. You mentioned one thing is a mentor. Obviously, that's critical, and your rich dad served as that for you.
Right. I'll give you the three simple tips everybody can do.
Okay.
Number one is you have to watch your vocabulary. You know, there's rich words and poor words. Like the worst word you can use, I can't. I'll never be rich. I can't do it. I can't afford it. You know, poor people use the word can't more than rich people. So instead of saying I can't, say how can I? The second thing is vocabulary. Do you know the difference between a cap rate and a PE? Now, if you don't know the difference, or ROI and an IRR, if you don't know the definition of vocabulary, then your brain is a poor person's brain. So just get a financial dictionary and look up different words. Different asset classes, like real estate, uses cap rates, whereas the stock market uses the word PE, and you have to know the difference. Otherwise,
right,
you're not part of that industry. So words are very important. Second thing are your friends. If you have friends with bad attitudes who are, oh, I'm not interested in money, or money doesn't make you happy, get new friends. Doesn't mean you can't be friends with them. Just increase your friends base. You know, go to like the Learning Annex events or whatever I talk at, and meet people who are interested in making getting rich. Now, if you have friends or a wife or a husband that's not interested, you're in trouble. And the third point is who you take financial advice from. The reason most people are struggling financially is because they're taking financial advice from salespeople, not rich people. For example, they take money from, they take advice from stockbrokers or real estate brokers. And as my rich dad said, the reason they're called brokers is because they're broker than you, and they have. and the worst advice is, I mean, this happened to me the other day. I was talking to this woman. She says, oh, I bought $1,000 of this share of stock. I said, whoa, Donald Trump, you know, $1,000, you know. And I said, so who gave you the, what made you decide to buy the share of stock? She says, oh, my hairdresser gave me a tip.
Oh, dear.
Now, do you realize how true that is in most cases?
Yeah.
And I said, most people come up to me and they say, I have $10,000. What should I do with it? And the first thing I said, if I was you, I wouldn't tell anybody that you have $10,000 and you're an idiot. Because if you don't know what to do with your money, there's a lot of people out there who will tell you what to do with it and give it to them.
Right.
Because they know what to do with it and it's put it in their pocket.
Right.
And that's why, you know, Time Magazine, October 31st, 2005, just came out and said how Wall Street is picking the pension, the workers' pockets with the help of the Congress. That's the quote. I mean, I had the article right here. But basically, the rich are stealing from the working class.
Huh.
And that's
could you repeat that headline again?
It's Time Magazine, October 31st, 2005, and I had it right in front of me. But basically, it says how workers are being ripped off by Wall Street and Congress.
Uh-huh.
And they do it through a thing called IRAs, 401Ks, pension plans, mutual funds.
And how is that happening?
Well, because people don't know the difference between a good investment and a bad investment, and a good advice from bad advice, or the tax ramifications of them. The worst tax ramification is a 401K in America. It's the worst possible investment after savings.
And I'm sure most people don't understand why that would be the truth. So can you explain it?
Well, the reason is when your financial planner says that you'll take your money out when you're 65 because your income goes down,
mm-hmm.
The reason they're saying that is they expect you to be poor when you're 65. So if you pull, so let's say you're in the 40% bracket when you're working, they assume that you'll drop to the 20 or the 15% bracket when you're retired.
Okay.
So the 401k works as long as you're planning on being poor. Now, if you plan on being rich, the 401k won't work because your money will exit at the highest tax rates possible.
Uh-huh.
And so that's just one of the many reasons why. And so they don't tell you about taxes. The worst thing that they tell you to save money, that's the worst. They put your money in money market funds, and when you turn 50, you know, to 65, put it in bonds. The reason that's dangerous is very simply because I'm predicting that we're going to have such a high inflation rate because the governments are going to start printing money because they can't afford to pay for their debts, that the people on fixed incomes will get wiped out.
Hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
Because, you know, a loaf of bread today might be, let's say, $2. And when you retire, it might be $20. You're still getting the same fixed income rate.
Well, I hate to say it. Maybe you said it, but it was Hitler. Hitler came to power on the wave of Germany printing money, right?
1933, he was elected to power. Why? Because of a thing called hyperinflation.
Right.
And hyperinflation was caused by the Weimar government printing too much money. Hmm. And in March this year, just last month, the U.S. government stop printing M3. Now, M3, for those who don't know, it's an economics term. There's M1, M2, and M3. M3 is the amount of money in the system. And the reason they stopped printing it, it now gives George and company and the Federal Reserve to print as much money as they can, which means the value of your dollar will drop even faster. That's
when you say they stopped printing it, you're saying they stopped reporting M3, right?
They stopped reporting it, and they can print at will then.
So for those of us who don't want to be on the scary side of that, we come back to financial education, and you've created, I know, even before you wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you had created this game called the Cash Flow Game, correct?
Yeah, Cash Flow Game is the first game that combines two subjects. One is the subject called accounting, the single most boring subject in business school. And it's combined with the most scary subject, it's called investing. So when you combine boredom with terror, you have a very exciting game. But I recommend you have to play it at least 10 times. It's like putting your mind in the gym, and you begin to think like an entrepreneur or an investor rather than an employee. So it's to break up the old thought patterns. So if you only play it once, you don't learn that much. But if you play it over and over again and discuss it with your friends, you'll find your mind changing. And when your mind changes, you'll see the world changes. And the other product I just came out with a product called Teach to Be Rich.
Uh-huh.
And the reason all the stuff I'm talking about is in Teach to Be Rich. What you talked about is in 1933, how Hitler came to power,
right,
with the Weimar government. It is basically the big picture of money and why the rich are getting richer and why so many people, the middle class, is getting wiped out. And so it's for people, the reason it's called Teach to Be Rich is because, I learned in Sunday school, give and you shall receive, or the law of reciprocity. So if you want to learn something, teach it. If you want to get rich, the best way is to help somebody else get rich, and they'll get richer too.
Tell us how Teach to Be Rich is structured.
Well, Teach to Be Rich is two big books, and it's very simply written, but it's why the rich are getting richer. It's about the tax laws and all. It's very simply written.
Mm-hmm.
But it also comes with three DVDs. And the reason the DVDs are important is because if you have somebody in your family, let's say it's your son or your wife or your husband, is not interested in money, or they don't want to read a book, then you plug the DVDs in, and the DVDs should shock them enough so they'll read the book.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, they'll say, well, maybe we should get this board game, and maybe we can play this board game and start putting our minds and start thinking like rich people, like entrepreneurs instead of employees, to becoming active investors instead of passive investors. And if you're a person who just gives your money over to some financial planner, you're a passive investor, and you have to pay for their salaries. There's nothing wrong with that if you like doing it, but I can get a higher return without paying them.
So it's
really about teaching yourself, your family. So your church group, Teach to Be Rich, the Cash Flow Game, is really a great teaching tool if the people will commit to play it 5 to 10 times, and you'll find their minds completely open up. You'll see more opportunities. See, the reality is, the reason I love making money is because there's more opportunities every single day. Look at those guys at Google. 10 years ago there wasn't a Google, and now they're billionaires.
Yes.
As I said, the tax laws are written for people who want to be rich, and they're written against employees, and they're written against professionals like doctors and lawyers.
So what I hear you saying is that these programs, Teach to Be Rich and the Cash Flow Game, are teaching people the principles and the educating them in how to think like people who are rich. Is that
yes.
right?
Yes, because you think, you take action, and then you have results, right? Thoughts, action, results.
Right.
So if you don't like your results, in other words, you don't like your money today, don't work any harder. Change your thinking.
Mm.
When you change your thinking, you'll change what you do, then you'll change your results, and you repeat the process. Change your thinking, you'll change your actions, you increase your results. So if you play the game 10 times and you teach it to 10 people, I think you will see more opportunity than ever before, and then you'll find out why I'm so love making money. It sure beats working for the post office and for a pension, living for job security instead of freedom. And security and freedom are exactly the opposite words. The more security you have, the less freedom you have. So, let's say I'm working for the federal government. I may be really secure, but I have no freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really quit. And that's why the people with the most security and the least freedom are in jail. That's why it's called maximum security. So that's why, Chris, when I say stop, step back and take a look. I'm sure so many listeners have been told that job security was important. And,
absolutely.
Financial security. And you look at it, it puts you in jail. And what I'm saying is take a look at the other side of it. Wonder why guys like me are so excited about oil going to $200 a gallon. Why? Because I own an oil well. Now I feel for the guys who have to pay me the money, but that's the game. You know, that's real life. You can say it's not fair. That's correct. It's not fair. Is it easy? No, but it's sure a lot of fun.
Well, and it seems to me it comes back to this whole issue of passion. You own an oil well because it's aligned with the things you're passionate about.
Yeah, because it's a game.
Yeah.
You know, like I started my rich dad started me, you know, on my financial education when I was 7-9 years old playing Monopoly. He said the formula for great wealth is found on the game board: 4 greenhouses, 1 red hotel, and that's all I do. I start small, trade for big. Start small, trade for big. I don't sell my stuff. I just keep them. They keep throwing more cash off. So every year I get richer whether I work or not.
It's a great position to be in.
Yeah. So it's fun.
It is fun. I can hear that in your voice.
Yeah.
And I also understand that there are clubs, these cash flow, there are people who get together to play the cash flow game. Something like what, 1,600 or more?
1,800 today.
1,800 clubs.
All over the world, because the game's in, I think, 15 different languages. So there's Chinese clubs, there's Japanese clubs, there's Canadian clubs. That's a drink. But anyway, all you do is go to richdad.com and look for a club. If you don't want to pay for my games, fine, because the games are designed to be teaching tools anyway. So go join a club and play for free.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and all the clubs are listed on your site, or people can locate them?
Yeah, and so you can find them pretty close. And then you'll meet your new friends, you'll change your vocabulary, and then you'll be able to hire better advisors.
Fabulous. Now, and also for those of our listeners who, if you want to know more about the cash flow game itself, you can go to www.healthywealthynwise.com/richdad. Again, healthywealthynwise.com/richdad. And there's a whole description of the cash flow games. And from what I understand, Robert, you've got two different games that are out now. Is that right?
Well, there's a lot of games, but there's two different versions. There's
two different versions.
101 is fundamental investing. That's Warren Buffett. And 202 is technical. And technical is George Soros, or, you know, when the stock goes up and down, trading volatility. So you actually have to be both today, both fundamental and technical.
Mm-hmm.
And so the faster you learn this, the better off, because what I'm trying to say to people is I think oil will pass $100 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
The economy will collapse. The stock market will collapse. And at that point, you've got to learn how to make money when things are collapsing.
Yeah.
That's what 202 teaches you. So I make money going up, and I make money going down. It doesn't make any difference. If you're living in fear of a crash, it's because you're only thinking in one direction. I don't care if it goes up or down, because I'll make money either way. And that's what 101 and 202 teach. But you learn 101 first, then you learn 202, which is trend investing, ups and downs.
So if people play these games over time, if they continue playing them over time, is that going to prepare them in terms of the thinking and the strategies to begin playing the game in real life as well?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. If you read in Teach to Be Rich, you'll find in there that there's a thing called the learning cone. And what the learning cone found out in 1969, that the worst way to learn is by reading. The second worst way of learning is by lecture. And what do our schools do?
Uh-huh.
Read and lecture.
Right.
And they found out the best way to learn is by real life, and the way just below that is called games or simulations. So cash flow is a game or simulation that simulates real life. It's like, say, taking your brain to the gym and preparing yourself before you run your marathon or whatever you do. It's to get your brain thinking in multiple directions, omnidirectional, so that you don't care if the economy is going up or down, because you'll make money. Please hear me again. In a few years, when the price of oil goes past $100, you're going to wish you learned how to make money when it's crashing around you.
Hear that. And the other thing that I'm hearing is that the way in which the cash flow game is structured, groups of people can play this. So even if someone doesn't have a club in their area, they could get the game and create a club, couldn't they?
That's correct. And that's the best way to learn. It's called cooperative learning. And what they found out. If you're cooperative, you'll learn more, except in school, if you cooperate, it's called cheating. And I was very cooperative.
So now we can cheat and it's legal.
Well, in the real world, people cooperate. In school,
right.
People are taught to do it on their own.
That is interesting.
It's the school is so opposite of my world. The world is exactly opposite. It's like a mirror. It's like going through the looking glass. It's like I think I'm going into a nut house every time I go to school. What are you guys doing here?
Well, and it is interesting. Isn't it the case, Robert, that people who are very successful, people who are rich, are collaborating all the time? Isn't that
Absolutely.
True?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's not only that. One more point I want to bring. You know, people think that being a millionaire is a be-all, end-all. Well, after this last round of inflation, I know morons who are millionaires. Like, I have a friend in Hawaii. He inherited his house that his father bought for $55,000, and today it's worth $2 million. His
wow.
father died and gave him the house. So my friend is technically a millionaire, except he still makes $30,000 a year.
Hmm.
So he's a millionaire who's broke.
Right.
And so, and he's still stuck because he can't figure out how to get out of the trap he's in because he can't move. He sells the house. You know, he'd have to move into a condo or something.
Right.
And he sits there, and he's a victim of his own money, a well-educated guy.
Hmm.
He sits there, and he can't figure out how come he's a millionaire but making only $30,000 a year. Because his net worth is $1 million, but his IQ is still zero.
His financial IQ.
Yeah,
what his
financial
talking?
IQ. He
right.
doesn't know what to do.
Right. He's and to come back to the theme you've been saying throughout this interview, what he hasn't learned is how to think like the rich think.
Yeah, because he can't step back and question his own thoughts. He assumes his thoughts are correct. Like, say, work hard.
Right.
He works hard, and he just pays more taxes. He tries to save money, but he doesn't get ahead. He has a 401k, but he's losing money. So he's diversified, he still loses money, and he has to pay tax on it. He can't figure it out, but he thinks he's doing the right thing. So you cannot learn until you question what you've already learned.
So I want to say again for our listeners that the cash flow game that Robert has created, the cash flow game 101 and 202, 101 teaching fundamentals, 202, teaching the technical aspects of investing. These things are mechanisms to learn how to raise your financial IQ. And you can go and read about them, check them out, again, by going to healthywealthy.com/richdad.
And Chris, what you said is how to get rid of fear is through knowledge.
Yes.
You know, if you learn 101, you learn 202, you have less fear and you have more excitement. Wacko case like me, hoping everything crashes.
Well, and what I love is that you've created these things so that anyone can go and do them in a simulated environment where you can face the fears, where it's not going to hurt too bad, right?
That's called play money.
Play money, exactly.
And you sit there, and you can become a billionaire and all that with fake money. You can also get wiped out with fake money, so it's
right.
really a fun time. But your mind doesn't know it's fake money. You know,
right.
but your mind doesn't. Your mind is going through all its hallucinations anyway.
Well, and so you have the opportunity to make all your mistakes with play money before you go out and are doing it with your real money.
That's correct, and that's how you act. You don't eliminate it because some fear is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it minimizes it and gives you better survival chances out there.
Well, it allows you to move past that fear, through that fear, to act in spite of the fear. That's what I hear.
If you can imagine this, after a while, after I learned how to shoot my machine guns and rockets, I was looking forward to combat. But until that point, I was terrified of combat. And
right.
Once I got past that, once I knew I could handle myself, I lost 3 aircraft and crashed 3 times, but I wasn't afraid anymore.
Right.
Because I knew how to handle it in all the different situations.
Got it.
Otherwise, I wouldn't come back alive. And so that's why I said the best thing the Marine Corps taught me, there's no second place.
Mm.
Only one person comes home alive that day.
Well, and I'd say you've proven that pretty well in your own life.
Well,
so
I enjoy playing that way.
Good. Robert, at Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, we believe strongly in the power of intention to manifest outcomes, and we'd like to know what your current most important project is. And what intention we here at Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, along with our readers and listeners, can hold for you?
I just, you know, have a conversation and ask people, why don't we teach kids about money at school?
Yeah.
You know, why? Money is not an evil subject. Ignorance is evil. And our schools, many of our, I'm not blaming the teachers, many people in the school system have this quasi-religious idea that the love of money is the root of all evil. And that's a religious idea, not an academic idea. It's
right.
Actually the lack of money is the root of all evil.
Mm.
So that's what, you know, what I like to ask people to do is just ask the school teachers, why don't we teach kids about money? And then, you know, show them Teach to Be Rich and tell them and explain. explain to them why saving money is really a bad idea. And you know, you'll find out your intention at that point to put up with people who are so embedded in the idea that saving money is the right thing to do. They can't question their own ideas. Just a simple idea of questioning saving money. You will find that people are very attached to their ideas and cannot change.
I think most of us have found that. I also think that's why many of the people are on this call, is to be able to get exposed to some other ideas than what they've been taught.
Yes, but, and I commend people for investing their time and their money to listen to an idiot like me speak. You know, when we talked earlier, my job was not to be right. My job was to disturb people.
Yes.
And then maybe think for themselves.
Good. So I think you've done that tonight, and we thank you for it. And is there one single idea that you'd leave our listeners with before we close?
Yeah, it's a question I speak a lot of times in churches.
Uh-huh.
I say the question is, does God want you to be rich or does God want you to be poor?
Mm.
And, you know, many people think that if you're poor, God will love you more. I don't think God cares. But I think you care whether you're rich or poor, so get off your butt and get rich.
Absolutely. I tend to think, actually, that God gives us the choice to be rich or poor, and it's a matter of whether we want to suffer or enjoy our lives. You know?
Absolutely. That's the way I say it.
Yeah.
You know, and then being poor is its own punishment.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. Robert, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for doing a great job. It's a great service to people.
Yeah, it is a great honor to have you with us. And I hope, I think all of our listeners have really gotten this idea that if we're not happy with the results we're getting right now, then it's time to change the action, change the thoughts and the action that we're taking to change the results that we're getting in our life. And you provided some very powerful tools for that, both with your latest program, Teach to Be Rich, and the Cash Flow Game, which we've been talking about. Again, for our listeners, you can read about the Cash Flow Game. You can get a group together and get a Cash Flow Game and start playing it together. It is a key mechanism for changing the thinking so that you can change the results that you're getting in your life. And you can go and check that out by going, again, to Healthy Wealthy, the letter N is in Nancy, wise.com/richdad. You can also go to richdad.com and find a group, if there's one in your area, that you can join up with, and you'll find there also a full description of the work that Robert and his wife Kim are doing, and Robert's co-author Sharon Lechter as well, to give you the tools, the knowledge that you need to be able to change your thinking and to create the wealth on every level that you choose to have in your life. So for our listeners, We look forward to being with you again in 2 weeks. We'll be interviewing Dave Buck, who is the CEO of Coachville. And then on May 2nd, we will be interviewing Immaculée Alibagiza. Dr. Wayne Dyer will be here co-hosting that interview. Immaculée is an amazing woman who survived the Rwanda genocide some years ago by hiding in a bathroom for 90 days. And she went through some incredible experiences and some amazing insights, and so we look forward to having you with us at that time as well. I'm going to open up the lines and say goodnight.